Chapter 3. If I weren't so disappointed, I'd be impressed. Principal Osaria was flipping through papers on her desk, outlining my misdeeds, reading out charges as she went. Charge: tampering with the truancy register. Suggested punishment: expulsion. Charge: absences more than 10 per semester. Suggested punishment: expulsion. She looked up at me. 10's just a provisional figure, of course. We've yet to sort through the register's data logs to get a precise estimate for how many classes you skipped. 10's about right, I admitted. That better not be sarcasm, my dad said in a tired voice from the monitor on the wall of Osaria's office, where his face crackled in by remote feed. My mother sat silently beside him. They were at their vacation home on the beaches of Dalun and couldn't be bothered to make the 2-hour trip to the capital to witness my expulsion in person.
What does this mean, exactly?
My mother asked, as if she didn't know. I'd been warned before. Cutting school and sneaking into the Chimera was one thing, but this went way beyond that. Osaria swiveled her chair to face the screen.
It means that my hands are tied. If it were just one or the other of these charges, I'd be able to exercise my discretion in meting out punishment.
She frowned deeply. But in addition to the rules he broke at school, he also tampered with the ID scans at the Chimera. I have no choice.
Oh, no, said my mom. She looked like she was about to cry.
This is a surprise to you? My dad was turning red, nearly as mad at my mother as he was at me.
He's always been like this.
It was true. I'd always been a rule breaker. I'd always had a way of getting myself into trouble. I wasn't ashamed of that. I liked that about myself. But it tended to flummox the people around me. Lorien was a happy, prosperous, and law-abiding planet. The fact that I was always getting into trouble made me practically a freak of nature. Principal Osaria shifted uncomfortably in her seat, put off by my parents' bickering, and quickly broke in before they could continue.
I must say I'll be sorry to lose, Sandor.
She turned back to me.
Attendance issues aside, you are one of our very best students, and I have to admit that your tampering with the security systems, while illegal and dangerous, shows a certain amount of...
She paused.
Ingenuity.
Now, as I see it, there are two options available to him. If he elects to stay in the capital...
Yes, I said. I'm not leaving the city.
Then we can arrange to have him placed as an apprentice with the Munis. My heart sank.
The Munis?
The Munis were the custodial core of the city's workforce. Maintenance work. Most citizens of the capital were conscripted for Munis service by lottery, for year-long terms no more than twice in their lifetimes. There was no shame attached to performing Munis service in Lorien culture, but it was far from my idea of a good time. And entering the Munis as an apprentice was basically signing up to haul trash for the rest of my life. To me, that was a fate worse than death. I felt myself beginning to panic.
There's got to be something else in the city. Can I get some kind of job at Korra or the Chimera?
I knew it was a reach to ask for a work assignment in one of the very places I'd just gotten in trouble for sneaking into. But I was open to taking any job in them, no matter how menial. I'd scrub floors, if that's what it came to.
Yes, surely there are some better options.
My mother spoke up. I was surprised to hear her coming to my defense.
Osaria shook her head with regret. Unfortunately, all urban job assignments, other than apprenticeships, are reserved for adults. It's either munis or a Kabarak relocation. I thought my heart had already reached the bottom of my chest, but I felt it plunge deeper, right into the pit of my stomach. A Kabarak? Doing time outside of the city on one of Lorien's communal Kabaraks was an important part of Lorien's culture, not to mention essential for keeping the planet running smoothly. But it was definitely not a glamorous experience. Lorelite mining, chimera husbandry, farming, and all of it way out in the country, miles from any excitement. Unless pulling up weeds and digging through dirt all day is your idea of a good time. I had a bad feeling about this. On the screen, my father was nodding, looking almost satisfied, and I knew that my fate was as good as decided. Having done time on a Kabarak was considered a noble credential and was a prerequisite for working in government or the Lorien Defense Council, helping to protect Lorien from an attack by one of our non-existent enemies. Among a bunch of equally terrible options, the Kabarak looked like it had managed to win my parents' approval. Osaria, I think a few years on a Kabarak is just what my son needs. My dad was smiling as he said it, actually pleased with the outcome of the conversation. I looked up at the screen, but he avoided my gaze. He had to know exactly how awful it sounded to my ears. Even my mother wasn't going to bail me out this time. I agree, she said, giving me a furtive, apologetic glance. It really is the best option. Well, then, it's settled, said Osaria. Right then, I wished again that I'd been born a guard, one with the legacy to go back in time and undo all my mistakes of the previous night. Of course, if I undid the night, it would mean I would have never met Devectra, which might have almost been worth it. Well, almost. I left the academy, beginning the long walk back home to my parents' empty apartment. The school's shuttles to the city center didn't start running for hours, so I had to walk by myself on desolate streets. My parents weren't due back from Dalun for weeks, and they'd made no mention of coming back to the capital to see me off. I'd likely spend my last days in the city alone in the apartment, waiting for my Kabarak assignment and transportation details. The transpo details would probably come first, and would offer some clue about my fate. If the state arranged for a terrestrial craft, it meant I'd been assigned a nearby Kabarak colony, like Malka. If they ponied up for air transport, it meant I was being shipped far, far away to a Kabarak in the outer territories, the other side of the planet. Not that it made any difference. Exile was exile. And even after I did, my future would be forever changed. While I'd always imagined myself going on to a job that was easy and low-key, like Teve and Paxton's, or even working at a place like the Chimera, most people in Kabaraks ended up going on to a position in Lorien government. I shuddered at the thought of finding myself spending the rest of my days pushing paper as a bureaucrat at a dull-as-dirt office like the Lorien Defense Council, wasting my life trying to stave off an invasion from an extraplanetary attack that everyone knew was never coming, while I tried to cheer myself up by pretending I was actually doing something important. It was hopeless. For now, all I could do was try not to think about it and keep walking. My school disappeared behind me as the spires of Elkin loomed ahead, beckoning me towards the city center. I'd considered hanging around, waiting for the shuttle. It would have given me a chance to say goodbye to my friends when they got out of class. But the thought depressed me too much to bother. I couldn't stand the thought of them finding out how badly I'd messed up. Anyhow, I liked Adar and Rax and a few of the other kids at the academy well enough. But I didn't consider them my real people. I'd always been different, even from them. Everyone else on Lorien seemed to be content with exactly what they had. They were happy to live on the most perfect little planet in the whole damn universe. Why couldn't I be more like that? I was still wallowing in my unloric pool of self-pity when I heard my name. Sandor? I stopped in my tracks and turned around to see that an unfamiliar man a few years older than me was standing next to a parked Muni hovercraft a few paces behind me.
Are you Sandor?
He wore the distinctive blue tunic of a Mentor Sepan, the special class of Sepans who work for the LDC and are charged with training the guard and monitoring their legacies as they develop. I had no idea how he knew my name, and I didn't really want to find out. I'd had enough trouble today, and for all I knew, this guy was about to tell me I'd committed some new infraction without even realizing it. Yeah, I said. That's my name, all right. Without waiting for a response, I turned again and resumed my walk. Without asking permission, he kept pace beside me.
My apologies. I'd meant to catch you at your meeting with Osaria, but I got there too late.
I was silent.
I'm Brandon. I'm a Mentor Sepan at the Lorien Defense Academy. Sorry, dude, I said. I'm not a guard, just your typical, boring Sepan. No need for a mentor. And I flunked the LDA aptitude test years ago.
Yeah, said Brandon. I've seen your scores.
He waggled his eyebrows suggestively, like he knew I had tanked the exam on purpose to avoid being sent off to the prestigious academy. Of course, compared to a Kabarak, mentorship training sounded pretty good at this point. If I'd known what was in store for me, maybe I would have thought twice about bombing that test all those years ago.
We got word of your little hijinks over at the academy, Brandon said.
I looked at him in surprise. How in the world would they have heard about one underage Sepan's misadventures at the Chimera? But Brandon was talking like that was the most normal thing in the world.
We were impressed, he said. That kind of technological work is quite unusual for someone your age, especially someone without academy training. If you put your talents to work in a more serious way, you could really make a difference in the Lorien security efforts.
I was reminded why I didn't care for LDA types. They took themselves way too seriously. Lorien had never had a war. We had never been attacked. And yet these people acted like we were living under constant threat. It was like they just told themselves that so they could feel important. I waved Brandon off. Yeah, well, I said, I'm off to a Kabarak. Hopefully they'll appreciate my skills there.
They won't, he replied with a shrug. Listen, the LDA could use some fresh blood and some new hands. We have some decent engineers and techs, but no one with your gift for problem solving.
I rolled my eyes. An engineer at the LDA? That was almost as bad as joining the Munis. Sorry, man. Not interested. I kept walking.
Our reputation is not what it used to be, I see.
Brandon gave me a wry smile. I could tell he was amused by my snottiness.
And it's true that many Lorik questioned the need for a defense at all during such a time of peace. Their mistake. But we have resources, Sandor. You'd have full access to our engineering and computer laboratories. Plus, after 6 months, you'd have weekend privileges. And I've been given authority to invite you to join the Academy despite your, uncharacteristically poor performance on the aptitude exam.
I stopped in my tracks.
You'd be close to the city,
he added.
Who knows? Maybe eventually when you're a little older, you'd be able to get some time off to visit the Chimera.
Clearly Brandon had more information on me than could be gleaned from security bulletins about my stunt at the Chimera. He was pushing my buttons a little too precisely. You got a psych profile on me, Brandon? He only smiled.
Just decide if you'd rather spend the last few years of your adolescence playing with defense tech near the city, using your actual skills, or out in the outer territories, shoveling Chimera shit.
Outer territories? I felt my mouth go dry. Why had he said that? Had he heard something about my likely assignment? What do you know? I asked.
It's not what I know, Sandor. It's what I can make happen.
And with that, he turned around and walked away. Chapter 4. Exiting the transport van a few weeks later, I approached the front entrance of the Lorien Defense Academy warily, my bags over my shoulder. The school was a windowless gray cube, plopped on a grassy stretch of land at the edge of Capital City. Somehow, for such a prestigious place, I was expecting something a little more lavish. Instead, the only thing that set it apart from any other Lorik government building was a single statue of the Elder Pittacus. Near the entrance, a few feet away from the statue, a few young Mentor Sapons in shapeless blue tunics and loose black pants were talking in low tones with a Lorien council member, who I identified immediately from his tan robe. They had as little style or flair as the building itself. As I passed, the council member and the Sapons looked up in neutral acknowledgement. I waved at them, and then felt stupid. It was practically a relief when I entered the building. The lobby was as sparsely decorated as the buildings outside, but at least it was busy. Young mentor trainees about my age, single file marching off to class. There were a few adult mentor Sapons, and even a couple of guard kids laughing and chasing after each other in their tiny blue suits.
Claudus! A mentor shouted.
With a sheepish look on his face, one of the young guards slowed down. Recognizing the mentor as Brandon, I walked up to him. He'd been nice to me when he'd recruited me on the street, and the sight of a familiar face was suddenly welcome. But if I was expecting him to be a new friend, I shouldn't have. Brandon gave me a cursory up-and-down look like he barely knew me, and then was all business.
What are these?
Without a word of greeting, Brandon plucked the bags off my shoulders. They're my things from home, I said, struggling to hold on to them.
We're going to have to confiscate them, he said. You'll be issued everything you need in processing.
Those are my clothes. I don't know why I cared. Of course I'd have to wear the LDA uniform now, so I don't know what good my clothes would do me. Still, the thought of having them confiscated depressed me. My clothes were part of what made me, me. Now I'd just look like everyone else. Brandon shook his head at my foolishness.
You can arrange to have those shipped back to your parents' place. They'll be waiting for you when you graduate.
With a curt nod, he pointed towards the processing office and disappeared down a hallway. Feeling worse than ever, I trudged to processing, where an LDA administrator curtly issued me three identical green tunics, wrapped in paper. After handing them to me, he stood there expectantly, and I realized I was expected to change right in front of him so that he could collect the clothes I was already wearing. Probably so he could take them off to whatever storage locker or incinerator the rest of my clothes were destined for. A little privacy? I asked. He turned around. I seized the opportunity to undress quickly, throw on the tunic, and hide my favorite Calvaca t-shirt inside the folds of my scratchy new garment. One piece of real clothing was better than none. "All done," I said, shoving the rest of my clothes in the administrator's hands, hoping that if I bunched them all up in a wad, the guy wouldn't notice he'd been shorted. It worked. He gave me my dormitory assignment and told me to go there and await instructions for the rest of my orientation. After being stripped of nearly all my worldly possessions, I made my way deeper into the building, trying to get a feel for the place. I walked past open seminar rooms, administrative offices, gymnasiums, labs, even a glass-walled Chimera observatory where a clutch of Lorien's legendary beasts chased after each other in circles, growling and snorting as they changed from one form to another, the shapes of their bodies shifting with liquid ease. At least they were allowed to look how they wanted. I stood and watched them for a few minutes before moving on. Finally, I reached the long corridor of the dormitory section and arrived at my dorm, 219. This was my room. I hadn't been issued a key, so I took a deep breath, knocked, and waited. A moment later, the door opened, and a guy with small, nervous eyes, a wide mouth, and a bulbous nose greeted me. His green tunic was identical to mine, and I stupidly wondered how we were going to remember whose was whose.
"You must be Sandor," the guy said stiffly. "I'm Rapp. Come in."
I entered the room, doing my best to conceal my horror as I appraised the Spartan bunk beds, the bare stone floors, the curtainless window staring out onto a sparse and underlit courtyard.
"How minimalist," I said.
"Yeah," Rapp said. "The LDA keeps it pretty simple. We're here to defend Lorien, not to sleep comfortably, I guess."
At least he didn't sound any happier about it than I was. I flopped on the bottom bunk. The mattress was thin and hard.
"So we're roommates, huh?" I asked. "Are you training for the tech department, too?"
"Yep. We'll be seeing a lot of each other, I guess. Between the two of us, you're looking at the whole program."
"What?"
"We're it. There's a core of about 20 active engineers and 15 active techs on the whole planet, but only 2 trainees at a time."
Oh, man. This guy seemed nice enough, I guess, but if it was just us, he could be the coolest guy on all of Lorien, and we'd still get sick of each other.
"It's not so bad, though," he went on, not registering my disappointment. "Even though we're just trainees, the Corps is so short-staffed lately that they send us out on grid surveys, repair work on the electronic perimeters, stuff like that."
Exciting. I didn't mean to sound so sarcastic, but I couldn't help it. This would be my new life for at least the next 2 years. And it was already a total bore. Fortunately, Rapp was immune to irony.
"It is. To know that I'm playing a small but significant role in keeping Lorien safe, I feel really blessed."
I couldn't take it. I lurched up from the bed.
"Safe from what?" I asked.
Rapp stared at me, dumbly.
"What do you mean?"
"Keeping Lorien safe from what? There hasn't been an attack on this planet for eons. For all our explorations and recon missions, we haven't even had direct communication of any kind with another planet for hundreds of years. What are we afraid of? A civil war? Lorians are all pacifists. Even in the sketchiest part of City Center, or the most backward parts of the Outer Territories, nothing bad ever happens. I mean, I'm considered a hardened criminal around here. And all I did was get caught at a Devectra show." Rapp looked taken aback, but I didn't care. "Do you really think you're making a difference?" I spat. "Please. All this stuff about ancient prophecies and attacks that will probably never come. It's superstition." Rapp didn't take my bait. Instead of answering,
He solemnly walked to the door.
I'll come back in a little while to give you a tour of the grounds. But I gotta say, if this is your attitude on day one, you're going to have a pretty miserable time here.
Yeah, I thought. No shit. Chapter 5. It would have been nice if I could say my first week at the LDA passed by in a blur. Actually, it dragged on even more endlessly than I'd anticipated. Rap, it turned out, was still learning things in class that I had taught myself ages ago, so I couldn't even count on my schoolwork to keep me interested. Sure, I could have told Professor Orkin that I already knew all this stuff, but I kept it to myself. Instead, I just kept my head down in three-person seminars, nodding along with the lesson and trying to pretend like it was all new to me. I knew I was being stupid. If I had to be here, I might as well have tried to learn something. But in a weird way, it felt like that would be letting them win. If I wasted my time, I was still getting away with something, right? Things weren't much more interesting in the commissary than they were in class. I kept pretty much to myself, and so did all the other students at the academy. As for the mentor sapons, who'd been assigned their own guard to train, they were pretty scarce around campus. And the ones who did eat in the commissary usually had their hands too full with their young guard charges to mix with engineering trainees like me and Rap. The only people at the academy who interested me at all were the guard kids, who were just coming into their powers, and gave the school what little sense of life it had. On Lorien, guard children are raised by their grandparents until their 11th year, when they're sent away to a place like the LDA to train with their assigned mentor, Sapon. There are training academies for them all over Lorien, but LDA is considered one of the best. The guard who wind up here are the ones who are expected to have some serious power going on. Some of these kids racing the halls of the LDA had only started to manifest the very beginnings of their gifts, while others were already onto their second and third legacies. But almost all of them were lit up, charged by the excitement of coming into their powers, not to mention living away from home for the first time. They had their whole future to look forward to. Pretty much the only exciting thing that happened in my entire first week was that one of the youngest guard, a dark-haired, mischievous-looking kid named Samil, almost destroyed the whole school. That was actually kind of fun. I guess Samil had been showing off his emerging pyrokinetic legacy to some older kids in an empty classroom when things had started to get out of control. Before long, the fire was raging. The halls of the school filled with smoke as sirens blared, and Sapon raced to evacuate the students and staff while the older, more experienced guard headed toward the fire in an attempt to contain it. The rest of us were gathered on the lawn, waiting for it all to get sorted out, and for a few minutes at least, as black smoke curled from the building into the sky, it looked like maybe my stay at the Lorien Defense Academy would be a short one. "So if this place burns to the ground, they'll send me home, right?" I asked Rap.
"Don't sound too disappointed or anything," he said, disdainfully.
When I didn't reply, he just snorted.
"Dude, you think this doesn't happen all the time? The walls here are fireproof, not to mention everything else proof. This school's built to withstand just about anything. It's what's inside that room that you should be worried about. Like the poor kid who just found out being able to generate giant fireballs might not be as cool as it sounds."
I felt instantly guilty that I hadn't even considered that. Every year on Lorien there were stories about young guard perishing in grisly accidents, killed by powers that they didn't know how to control, or in some cases, didn't yet know they even had. There had been the girl with the ability to manipulate temperature, who'd accidentally frozen herself to death in the bathtub. And a boy with sonic flight who'd overshot Lorien's gravitational pull and found himself caught in the unbreathable atmosphere many miles above the ground. It was the purpose of Mentor Sapons to prevent such incidents. But accidents still happened. "Sorry," I mumbled to Rap. "I guess I wasn't thinking." He shrugged,
and his expression softened.
Yeah, he said. I know. Don't worry about it.
I glanced over at Vaten, the sapon of the kid who'd started the fire. His face was pale and anguished, and I knew that if anything had happened to his charge, he'd never be able to forgive himself. But a few minutes later, a tiny figure crept from the smoke and flame. It was Samil, completely unscathed. He had an expression on his face that was equal parts shame, terror, and exhilarated pride. Everyone whooped with joy and relief, and in the first show of real emotion that I'd seen since I'd gotten to the academy, Vaten ran across the field and wrapped Samil in a huge hug. The boy's skin, just as fireproof as the walls of the school, it turned out, was still burning with heat. Vaten didn't let go, even as it charred the fabric of his blue tunic. I was relieved, too. I mean, of course I was relieved. I didn't want anyone to die, much less an 11-year-old kid. But at least the fire had been something. Once it was over, everything was just back to normal. And by now, I'd had enough normal to last me the rest of my life. The nights at LDA weren't much different from the days. At least I had Rap to keep me company. Yeah, he took himself way too seriously, but at least he was someone to talk to. And he wasn't quite as lame as I'd thought he was at first. He had no idea who Devectra was. But ever since I'd told him my story about meeting her, he'd wanted to hear all about it. Not just about Devectra, but about the Chimera, and about how I'd managed to sneak in, and had I really been a regular there. Plus, he let me copy his homework, which was nice, because even though it was mostly easy, there was a lot of it. Maybe if I'd thought there was a point to doing it myself, I would have been more interested. Back at home, I'd taught myself to tinker with machinery and electronics as a means to an end. It was a way to get out of class, to get into places like the Chimera. To be whoever I wanted to be. It was a way to trick the system. Here, it was the system. And it was a system I didn't have faith in. According to legend, or history, depending on who you listen to, the original Nine Elders had brought forth the Great Lorik Age eons ago when they discovered the Phoenix Stones. It was this ancient event that had supposedly awakened the legacies of the Guard and called the shape-changing Chimera out of hiding, making Lorien a place of prosperity and peace that was unprecedented throughout the known universe. From that time on, Lorien's ecosystem flourished. Where food and resources had once been scarce, there was now more than enough for everyone. What the planet itself didn't offer up in excess could easily be provided by the strange, amazing, and endlessly varied powers of the Guard. On other planets, this was the stuff people fought tooth and nail over. Not here. Here on Lorien, we could just live. But the Elders had also set forth a prophecy that one day, when we were least prepared for it, a threat would come to test us and destroy us. We wouldn't know when that threat was coming, but it would come. And when it did, we would have to be ready for it. That was why the LDA existed. That's why I was learning to create and maintain ever more elaborate systems of defense against an enemy that I was pretty sure was mostly fantasy. Just in case tomorrow was the day we all woke up and found ourselves under attack. Back home, everyone knew the deal. But no one seemed to pay much attention to it. The discovery of the Phoenix Stones was just a story. Something that had happened so long ago it barely seemed real. And the ancient elder's prophecy, well, even if it did come true someday, it sure didn't seem like it was going to happen anytime soon. While most good Lorik paid lip service to the good work that people were doing at places like the LDA, ensuring that Lorien stayed safe for generations to come. Even the most Lorik among them didn't seem to take any of it too seriously. Things were perfect, after all. Why worry about what might happen someday?
Here at the academy, it was a totally different story. Everyone walked around acting like the prophecy was about 5 minutes away from coming to pass, like we were going to be under attack at any minute. When I told Rapp I didn't really think it much mattered whether the grid, the vast defense system that scanned Capital City's airways for potential intruders, was perfectly maintained at all times, it was like I'd insulted him personally.
"Some of us actually care about what we do here," he said. He spoke slowly and carefully as he said it, but his voice was shaking.
I could tell I'd really gotten to him.
"While everyone else on Lorien is living in their little utopia, congratulating themselves for how perfect the place is, it's people like me who are busting our asses to keep it that way. Without the grid, we'd be sitting ducks, and people just laugh at us."
"Calm down," I said, taken aback by how angry he'd gotten. "You're acting like I just said Pittacus Lore's a big loser or something." He scowled.
"Yeah, well," he said, "you probably think that too, don't you?"
I paused. "No," I said. "I mean, not exactly. Actually, I had no idea what the famous Pittacus Lore was like at all. I'd never seen him. Even the statue of Pittacus outside the school wasn't of the current Pittacus, but of one of the old ones, probably from like 1,000 years ago or something. The current elders had the same names as the original nine, who had supposedly discovered the Phoenix Stones all those years ago, but they were otherwise many times removed from the elders of legend. The names were passed along like titles, along with the elders' special abilities, to specially picked successors who took on their forebearers' role of watching over Lorien, of safeguarding our environment, and of protecting our traditions and way of life. I knew that they made occasional trips to the LDA to consult with the Mentor Sepan and the instructors, but I had never seen them. Aside from these brief interactions with the world, the elders had long ago removed themselves from the day-to-day activities of life on Lorien. Even their exact whereabouts were unknown. Some Lorik said they lived deep in the mountains of Feldsmore, while others claimed they lived in a giant glass fortress deep at the bottom of the Tarax Ocean. Those are just some of the more plausible theories. The only thing I knew was that it didn't seem like the elders did very much at all, and that most people at the LDA, along with the rest of the Lorien defense operation, were telling themselves stories about prophecies that would never come true. Chapter 6. On my 11th day at the LDA, I was woken by Rapp tugging on my arm.
"Come on, Sandor," he said. "We're going to be late."
"Your mom's a chimera's butt," I mumbled irritably, shoving him away and pulling my thin, scratchy sheet over my head. This had become a morning ritual between us. He'd try to wake me up, reminding me that it was my solemn Lorik duty to rise and shine, and I'd come up with more and more colorful ways to tell him to leave me the hell alone. We were both getting sick of the routine.
"Fine," said Rapp, turning to go. "I'll just go to the city center by myself."
I opened my eyes and sat up in bed. "City center?"
"Yeah," he said. "I saw Orkin at the commissary. She said class was canceled and that we're supposed to report to transport immediately. She wants us to use the time to do grid maintenance."
"Well, why didn't you just say that?" I was already out of bed, hurriedly throwing on my tunic, excited by the chance to go into the city. He just snorted as I checked myself out in the dull, tiny mirror over my dresser, trying in vain to flatten the irregular ridges of my cow-licked hair with spit.
"Dude," he said, "you think a little primping's gonna make any difference? All the girls in the city just stare right through us. Our tunics may as well be invisibility cloaks."
I knew he was right, but I groaned anyway, turned from my reflection and headed out the door as he followed behind me. It was hard to be too upset. No grid maintenance wasn't all that exciting or anything, but still, we were going to the city. We arrived at the transport hangar and got into the Academy's only available two-seater, a teardrop-shaped vehicle some of the other students referred to as the Egg. I watched from the passenger seat as Rapp spoke into a receiver on the dashboard, programming our journey into City Center according to the assignment that Orkin had given him.
Sector 329, Security Nodule H, Patch 3.
He flipped through a binder, pulling up additional coordinates.
Sector 297, Nodule J, Patch 7.
He had a cocky little smile as he said it, like this stuff made him feel really important or something. I didn't get Rapp at all. How could anyone get excited about grid maintenance? It was like getting excited about brushing your teeth, except that brushing your teeth only takes 2 minutes, and that's if you do a really good job. At the same time, I felt sort of bad that I was always giving him a hard time. Rapp was like me in his own weird way. I was in the LDA's engineering program because I'd been forced to be here. But he actually wanted to be here. Considering there were only two of us in the whole class, that sort of made him an even bigger freak than me. And he didn't care. Most of the time, he hardly even seemed to notice when I made fun of him. I almost had to admire the guy. Obviously, I would never tell him that, but at least, I figured, I could tell him I didn't really think his mom looked like a chimera's butt, and that she was probably actually pretty hot. But before I could even formulate my apology, he'd entered our last coordinate and the Egg took off, shooting us out of the hangar, past the cube of the Academy building, and then through the pastures and mud huts and chimera pens of the Alwan Kabarak. Alwan was the only Kabarak on Lorien within city limits, and thus would have been my first choice had I been assigned to one. I watched the early rising Kabarakians dressed in their red silks and ceremonial charms, busily tending to their land as our Egg whizzed past them and around them, unfazed by another routine intrusion of LDA speedcraft. It was funny to think, only weeks ago, I was in a depressed panic at the idea of working on a Kabarak. After my time at the Academy, it no longer looked like such a bad way to live. Then again, maybe I was just jealous of their outfits. I looked better in red than in green. The Egg crossed the western edge of Alwan and gained speed through the depopulated outer industrial zones of the city's east side on its course to City Center, miles ahead. The spires of Elkin glinted brightly from the morning suns. I realized I had never seen City Center from this particular distance and angle. Perhaps it was nostalgia or homesickness, but it looked more beautiful than ever. Then, beyond the spires, I saw something strange. Off in the distance, sprouting between the spires on the horizon, was a massive column of violet light, stabbing upwards into the clouds. It was a bright morning, and yet the rays of the sun did nothing to diminish the hard-edged, almost tactile thickness of the light. It was astonishing.
"Quarter moons in 3 days," said Rapp, barely even looking at the light.
According to our collective legend, a quarter moon hung in the sky the day the first elders discovered the Phoenix Stones, and over the years a holiday had developed around the regular appearance of the quarter moon in the sky. In the city and out on the settlements and Kabaraks, people party into the wee hours, dancing, gathering around campfires and lighting fireworks, celebrating the miracle of our planet's rebirth. Temporary monuments and light displays called heralds were often arranged for by city government or by the Elder Council to commemorate our history and to celebrate the quarter moon's approach. This was a much bigger and more elaborate herald than I'd ever seen before, so tall and majestic it was probably visible far outside the city, if it was even coming from the city at all. It was a little weird, but I brushed it off. If there's one thing we Lorik, not to mention our elders, are good at, it's thinking up new ways to celebrate how great we are. Personally, it seemed to me like the elders could think of better ways to use their time and powers, but who was I to question their ancient wisdom?
When the egg finally whirred to a stop at a corner on the edge of Ilan Park, I felt a pang of surprise. "Wait a minute," I said, turning slowly to Rap. "This is where we're doing our grid maintenance?" Rap looked at me like I was crazy.
"Yeah, sure," he said. "I told you we were going to City Center. Why?"
"Because," I said, "this is Cora." I pointed to a nondescript door on the side of a big nondescript building. "That's the rear entrance."
"That's the club you've been talking about all this time?"
Rap pushed the door open and climbed out of the egg, his feet hitting the pavement with a thud.
"I have to say, man, I was picturing something, I don't know, like fancier or whatever. That just looks like a big, dirty warehouse."
I frowned as I climbed out after him. "It's the back door," I said. "Anyway, it's not supposed to look like anything on the outside. That makes it seem special when you see the inside." Rap cocked his head curiously and gave me a shrug like, "Whatever you say," and headed to a pole towering above the bottom slope of Ilan's Hill. In the days before I'd learned how to manipulate my ID band, it was practically the only place in town where I could go to dance and hang out at night when my parents were out of town. It wasn't anywhere near as cool as the Chimera, and the music was actually pretty bad most of the time. Plus, it always sort of smelled. But because they didn't serve ampules, there was no age restriction for getting in. I took what I could get. Now, though, I would have given just about anything to be back at Cora, even with the bad music and the awful smell. Suddenly, I missed that smell. Now I was standing outside in a wrinkled, ugly, green tunic, and, well, there was nothing I could do about it. I shuffled over to Rap, who had already used a harness to elevate himself a third of the way up the pole towards the grid point's control panel, and prepared to hoist myself up with him. At least up there, no one would recognize me in my tunic. Before I could begin my ascent, Rap called down to me.
"This one's actually not in such bad shape. Looks like a one-man job. I told Orkin I'd be able to handle it on my own, but she still doesn't trust me."
I was annoyed. It wasn't like I was that into the idea of hauling myself all the way up there just to fiddle with a bunch of wires for hours, but at least it was something to do. "So what? I'm just supposed to stand here and watch you work?" Rap, already engrossed in running diagnostics on the control panel, sighed and looked back at me.
"If you want to help, go check on the next patch on our list. Sector 297's walkable, but if you're feeling lazy, you could program the egg and I can meet you there."
Rap turned back to his work. It was like Rap was trying to get to me. He knew I had never done a maintenance run before and wouldn't have a clue how to start. He was forcing me to ask for help. Maybe he knew me better than I'd figured. If there's one thing I hate, it's asking for help. "Rap, you know I've never done it before."
"Orkin ran through every last step just 2 days ago in class."
Had she? I honestly had no recollection of it. "Guess I missed that," I said.
"It was on the homework, too." "Oh, wait, you never do the homework."
For a second I thought he was actually mad, but then he started to chuckle and tossed the key to the egg down to me.
"The spare kit's behind the passenger seat. The equipment is mostly self-explanatory, and if you get confused, you can always hit the prompt button for an explanation."
He turned back to his work.
"Trust me, it's not that hard. If you can trick the door scanners at the Chimera, you'll be able to figure it out in no time."
I walked up Island's Hill with my kit on my back and an infomod in my hand. It was a small square device that could pinpoint my exact location in the city and would also allow me to communicate with Rap, or even with the other Sapon back at the academy if necessary. Even though I knew this area like the back of my hand, I'd never bothered to learn the city's official coordinate system. As I crossed over the hill and entered the commercial district north of Ilan Park, the infomod indicated I had entered Sector 302, which most people called the Crescent because of the way the main street curved in on itself like a sliver of a moon.
I watched the module with strange fascination as all my old favorite neighborhood haunts, the Pit, Arcadia, were converted to their Muni's numbers on my tab, 282, 304, 299. I finally arrived at 297. Looking up from the locator, I realized with a start that I was standing just outside the Chimera. I sighed to myself, trying not to think too much about it. It didn't matter what building I was outside. I wasn't here to go inside. I couldn't go inside. I was here to climb a pole. So I threw the harness on and made my way up. When I reached the top, I looked out onto the horizon. From up here, the column of light Rap and I had seen earlier looked even more impressive. Well, maybe impressive is the wrong word. Actually, it was sort of creepy. It was vibrating and pulsing in a way that was almost otherworldly. And it was hard to tell where it was coming from. It could have been a few blocks away, or 100 miles. It wasn't like anything I'd ever seen for a quarter moon celebration before. It wasn't my business, though. I was here to work on the grid. So I unlocked the front of the control panel and flipped it open to find the keypad tucked within a dense nest of overlapping multicolored wires. I sighed again, a longer, deeper sigh than before. This was going to take a while. It was still the tail end of the morning, pretty much the only time of day the club wasn't hopping. The entrance to the Chimera was still quiet, but I knew the crowd would pick up within a few hours. I wondered for a second what my old friends would think if any of them stumbled by. Then I realized that they probably wouldn't even recognize me. To them, now, I was just another guy in a green tunic. The work was surprisingly absorbing. I started running automated diagnostics on individual wires to determine if they were in need of replacement. The only tricky part was figuring out which wires were which. They were all numbered, and the degraded wires had to be removed and replaced within a correct sequence lest I damage this entire piece of the grid. But as Rap had promised, the prompt system that came with the kit provided pretty helpful instructions when I got confused or when I had trouble identifying one of the degraded wires by sight. It had been weeks since I'd messed around with my ID band tech, and I had forgotten how much I missed this kind of tinkering. In my brief time at the LDA, I'd already forgotten that I was actually pretty good at it. I liked the way you could take it one step at a time, the way all the different pieces fit together like a puzzle. How even if you had no idea what you were doing, you could pretty much figure it out as long as you had a handle on the basic principles of it. Before too long, I'd stopped relying on the prompt module at all. I was identifying the wire sequences with no trouble and was adjusting them easily, going mostly on instinct. I had never really given much thought to the grid or what a vital function it provided to the city. In addition to using sophisticated sensors to monitor and register the goings-on of Capital City, compiling information from unis about the flow of people and goods, keeping everything running smoothly, perfectly, the grid's lesser-known function was a protective one. The nondescript poles that were so omnipresent that I barely noticed them actually stretched an invisible latticework of defensive shields and counterattack systems above the skyline. The reasoning behind the installation of the grid some hundreds of years ago was that the city had by far the highest population density of any part of the planet and was home to most of the important members of the Lorien government, along with being the central hub for our most important information and communication systems. Any enemy planning an attack on Lorien would likely strike the city first. I still didn't believe that was going to happen, but I also had to grudgingly admit that the whole thing was pretty cool. Too bad it was also basically useless. As I worked with almost unconscious ease, I contemplated the grid with new interest. One out of every four wires I ran diagnostics on needed replacement, which seemed strange. I reached back into my kit to check the date of this pole's last maintenance check, and was surprised to discover it was only a couple weeks ago. These wires were burning out at a pretty fast clip. Of all the wires I was servicing, there were very few backups or redundancies. Almost every wire served a unique function. And a bunch of them were messed up. which meant that this pole was probably pretty much broken. If I understood the nature of the grid's defense shield well enough, that meant the entire area around here was vulnerable to attack. Why would that be if it had just been repaired? I wondered if the control panel had a special glitch that was shorting out wires at a faster rate. My curiosity stoked, I hurried through my work, eager to get back to Rap, and ask him if he'd seen anything similar in the poles he'd serviced. I wanted to know if this one was a fluke or if there was a bigger problem. Not that I cared. What is it about a man in a dress? I'd become so absorbed in my work that the unexpected voice sent my heart leaping into my throat. I knew exactly who it was without even looking down. I looked down anyway. The electric white wig had been replaced by a brunette page boy. She was now wearing a simple red dress with a short flared skirt. The dress, along with the hair, was covered in white irregular polka dots. I don't even know how you get polka dots in your hair. Was that another of Devectra's legacies? Honestly, with her, nothing would surprise me. Hey, I said, the word coming out of my throat in an awkward croak. She looked up at me with a pursed-lip smile, shielding her eyes from the sun's. Never figured you for the Muni's apprentice type. LDA, actually, I said, determined to hide my embarrassment. Engineering trainee. Then realizing what a dork I sounded like, I added, I'm just in it for the tunic. She let out a lilting, genuine laugh. You actually don't look bad in it, she said. I just don't see why you guys wear those dumb pajama pants underneath. What's the point of wearing a dress, unless it's to show off your legs? You wouldn't say that if you'd ever seen my legs, I said, and then turned back to my work. Today was not the day that I was in the mood to be made fun of by the world's hottest girl. To my surprise, though, Devectra didn't leave. What exactly are you doing up there, anyway? She asked. I've always wondered what those poles were for. It's the grid. I didn't want to humor her ditzy act. Everyone knew what the grid was. Most of them chose not to care. The grid, she said. So, I guess you're one of those people who believes in all that stuff? What do you mean by that stuff? Great Elder Prophecy, Threat to Lorien, Eternal Vigilance, blah, blah, blah. Aliens are going to land tomorrow and take us all back to their home planet to clean their toilets unless you fix that box up there right this second. I thought for a second. No, I wasn't one of those people, obviously. Considering that it was basically what I'd been saying to Rap all week, I was surprised to find myself resisting her interpretation. Instead of laughing along with her, I bit my tongue, replaced the last of the faulty wires, and closed the front of the control panel before gearing up to make my descent back to the ground. Devectra made no motion to leave. Don't you have a show to prepare for? I asked. Nah, she said, leaning against the entrance and staring at me with a tough, inscrutable smile. I just came here for a fitting. I'm not playing again till the quarter moon. Ah, I said, throwing the kit over my shoulder. You should come, she said. I looked up, surprised by the offer, and wondered if she was pulling my leg. She had been making fun of me this whole time, right? Her smile widened. It was like she knew the effect she had on me. Of course she knows, I remembered, kicking myself. She can read my mind. She winked, turned, and walked away without another word. I just dangled there, hanging dumbly from my dumb pole. Even if she'd been serious, which I wasn't so sure about, being a mind reader must have its perks. There was no way I'd ever be able to take her up on the invitation. I wasn't allowed to leave the LDA campus after dark, for one. And plus, I'd never be able to get into the Chimera after the debacle of last time. Of course, Devectra knew all those things. I'd almost let myself believe she was for real. Chapter 7. When I reached the bottom of Island's Hill, I found Rap locked in serious-looking conversation with a mentor Sepan I'd never met before.
"This is Daxon,"
Rap introduced me as I approached. The guy didn't seem all that interested in meeting me, but I waved a half-hearted greeting anyway. He ignored it.
"I need to commandeer your transport for the rest of the day," said Daxon. "Something's come up, and I don't have time to get back to LDA.
"Sure," I said, shrugging. "Take it. We'll just finish our grid maintenance on foot and then walk back after." I was annoyed by the prospect of the long walk back to the academy, but wasn't going to let them see it.
"He can't take the egg without one of us," explained Rap. "We're the ones programmed on today's manifest. The ignition won't start unless one of us is at the wheel."
Apparently feeling the situation had been sufficiently explained, Daxon made his way to the egg and hopped into the passenger seat. Rap seemed to sense my confusion.
"I volunteered you to accompany him."
"Why me and not you?" I wouldn't admit it to Rap, but I was bummed. I had actually been starting to enjoy my grid repair work.
"Because we've still got 5 sectors and 8 patches to cover, and my completion rate is faster than yours."
I balked.
"No, I did one, and you did one,"
Rap interrupted me.
"I've done 3. I just came back to retrieve the egg, and that's when I saw Daxon."
He'd finished 3? Had I really been that slow? I was going to have to start actually paying attention in my classes if I didn't want to look like an idiot.
"This way, we may still stand a chance of getting through our list by day's end."
"Okay," I said, feeling strangely disappointed.
"There'll be other grid maintenance days," said Rap.
"Yeah," I said, "I know. Next time I'll be faster." I left him and climbed into the egg. I'd driven it around the LDA's campus before, but this was my first time piloting it for real, and I felt a funny surge of excitement. I mean, it's not the biggest thing to pilot it since it does most of the work on its own, but still, it's a big flying egg. What's not fun about that? The doors closed behind me with a whoosh. It was only once I took my seat that I became aware of the weird vibe Daxon was giving off. He was urgent and fidgety, and I was pretty sure I saw a line of sweat forming on his brow. "Where to?" I asked.
"We're going out west of the Malkan Kabarak," he said. "You can just tell the egg to stop there. We'll cover the rest of the distance on foot."
I spoke our coordinates into the receiver, and the egg took off, out of the city. It picked up speed once it breached the city limits. Unnerved by the way Daxon was drumming his leg and glancing around nervously, I stared straight ahead at the scenery whizzing by without speaking. The dusty plains ringing the city gave way to the increasingly lush vegetation of the rest of Lorien. I'd spent so little time outside the city, it was a shock to be reminded how green the vast majority of our planet was. The slab of violet light kept coming into view over the tops of the trees. "Elders went all out this year," I said, idly trying to make conversation with Daxon. He didn't respond. "The Herald," I said, pointing out the window. "Must have taken them at least a month to cook that one up." Daxon shifted uneasily in his seat, avoiding my gaze.
"Yeah," he said.
"What?" I asked. I didn't like the vibe I was picking up from him, and I'd never even seen him before, but Rap knew who he was, so I had no reason not to trust the guy.
"Nothing," he said. "We just don't know that it is a herald."
Mysteriousness and ominousness. Great. "What are you saying?" I pressed.
"The elders have been off-planet for a while, and they've been out of communication the past few days."
I couldn't figure out what he was getting at.
"Yeah, but that's nothing, right? I thought they were off-planet a lot. Don't they spend a lot of time doing all kinds of elder stuff that we could never understand?"
Sure,
he said, but he sounded skeptical. Then something occurred to me. Does this have anything to do with why my engineering class was canceled today? Daxon did a double take. I had clearly guessed right.
Orkin and a few council members made a trip to the column, he admitted, to scope it out, investigate. It's probably nothing.
Why are you so concerned? If the light isn't a herald, what do you think it is?
Look, don't worry about it, all right? I've just had a long day.
I sunk back into my seat, slightly annoyed. Just days ago, I hadn't cared one way or another about the backstage goings-on among the council, the Mentor Sapons, and the other figures of the LDA. But now that I was actually showing some curiosity, I was being told to mind my own business. It was frustrating. The egg cleared a few particularly dense acres of forest and came to a stop at the edge of the Malkin Kabarak. Daxon jumped out and immediately turned away from the perimeter fence, heading away from the settlement. I jogged to keep up. Why are we walking? Why didn't we just enter the coordinates in the first place, if you knew where we were going? Daxon answered without slowing down.
I'm here to meet a guard. My guard.
Ah, if Daxon had only recently been promoted to a Mentor Sapon, then maybe his testiness could be written off as mere nerves. A Mentor Sapon's first meeting with his guard is a pretty big deal. The bond between a Mentor Sapon and his guard mentee is considered almost sacred, almost as strong as the bond between a parent and child. And it lasted for life, even after the guard was grown up and no longer under the Sapon's direct tutelage. I could see how meeting someone you're going to have that kind of relationship with could freak a person out. Daxon kept talking as we made our way up the path.
Guards raised by his grandfather, and the grandfather lives this far out of the city for a reason. Hates technology, speedcraft. You know, still likes to do things the old way. I didn't want to surprise him with the sound of the engine.
Gradually, a small hut came into view up ahead, followed by a quickly approaching shape. It was racing right at us. A chimera. Before I knew what was happening, the chimera leapt off the ground and right into me, knocking me off my feet and onto my back. The chimera had taken the form of some kind of grinning, oversized canine. Out came its huge dog tongue, scratchily enveloping my entire face. Within seconds, I was drenched. Chimera are pretty common on most of Lorien, but they mostly keep away from the city. I hadn't been licked by one of the creatures since I was little, and I hadn't enjoyed it even then.
Bisco! Bisco! Down!
The animal immediately responded to the sound of its owner's voice and obediently jumped off of me, then scooted down the road toward where the voice was coming from. Daxon gave me a wry look as I stood and dusted myself off. A moment later, Bisco had returned to us with his master, a grinning little boy dressed in a guard's distinctively fitted suit. The boy's skin and hair were messy, caked in red dust, the whites of his eyes and teeth blazing through the dirty mask of his face. He grabbed a tuft of Bisco's shag and swung himself up on top of the chimera with no fear at all. Lots of people out in the country were like this with the animals. They'd been raised with them. I still thought it was weird. Even when they took on cute, cuddly forms, it was hard to forget exactly how powerful they really were.
Hi,
the kid said.
Hi,
Daxon said awkwardly. I could tell he was unsure of what he was supposed to do next. Just then, a burly man emerged from the hut down the road and walked towards us in no hurry. Not quite as dirt-caked as the boy, he was roughly dressed in only loose canvas pants and a few strands of ceremonial necklaces. His skin was weathered, whipped dry, and cracked by the outer winds.
Hello, he called out to us from a few paces away. Is there something I can do for you?
Daxon spoke. Yes.
We are from the Lorien Defense Council. I've been selected as your grandson's mentor.
The man cocked his head.
A bit early. Boy's got a few years left before LDA stewardship.
Grandpa? Asked the boy, still astride his chimera. His grandfather kept his eyes on Daxon, ignoring the boy. Daxon seemed nervous, fumbling for something within the folds of his tunic.
We need nothing from you at the present moment except your consent to give this to your boy.
He pulled out a bracelet from within his tunic, pretty much the same as the government ID band I'd hacked a few weeks ago, but bigger.
A new security protocol, nothing more.
I had no idea what he was talking about. The protocols for Guard and their mentors weren't something I'd studied at all. But I figured the LDC was doing some kind of tracking of young Guard. The boy's grandfather seemed reluctant, but the kid charged forward on Bisco and snatched the band right from Daxon's hand. He whooped triumphantly from the top of his chimera and slid the band up his wrist all the way to his elbow, then raced off down the road, kicking up a cloud of red dust in his wake.
He's a spirited child, the boy's grandfather said.
There was something a little sad about the way he said it, something I couldn't quite put my finger on.
He needs to keep the band on at all times.
Daxon seemed anxious about this point. I could read his worry. It was one thing for the boy to wear the band for fun, as part of a game. Another thing altogether to ensure that he continue to wear it. Daxon needed the grandfather behind this.
It's imperative.
I understand, the man said.
But it sort of sounded like he didn't. A few minutes later, we were back in the egg, back in our seats. I waited for Daxon to give me our next set of coordinates. This whole day had been way too long already, not to mention way too weird. I found myself actually wanting to go back to the academy. But for the moment, Daxon was quiet. Well, I asked, finally, are we going home or what? Before he could answer, Daxon's module beeped, and he looked down to read what it said. He grimaced and turned to me.
Do me a favor, he said, holding his wrist out. Last step. I need to sync my band to the one we just gave the kid.
I took Daxon's wrist in his hand and looked down at the brass band encircling it. Most ID bands were just that, plain bands with all the circuitry inside, so they looked almost like regular jewelry. Daxon's was different. It had a small digital interface and a couple of buttons on it.
Just hold the black button down while I start the sync.
As I held the button down, he started entering commands on his communication module, which were presumably being relayed to the ID band. Pretty unwieldy, I said.
Seriously, said Daxon, still typing into his tab. Since I got this upgraded ID band and locator, I've had to take it off every night. It's too big and heavy to sleep in.
I stared down at the band on Daxon's wrist, looking at it in a new light. It was no longer just an ID or a locator. It was a key. That night I lay on my bunk before dinner, processing the events of the day. There was no denying that the place was starting to get under my skin. A month ago, I wouldn't have cared that the grid was in sorry shape. A month ago, I barely knew what the grid was, for that matter. But this morning, when Devectra had come along and had called me one of those people, I hadn't corrected her. I'd actually felt almost insulted. I guess this place was rubbing off on me. I can't say I liked it. I was supposed to be the kind of guy who did my own thing and had my own opinions. I wasn't a joiner. Things weren't supposed to just rub off on me.
Good work today,
Rapp said, popping by the room to grab a couple of books from his desk just before dinner. I was slow, I said. Next time I'll do better.
Rapp shook his head like he couldn't believe me.
Oh, whatever,
he said.
You act like you don't care, and then you go and get all competitive. How'd things go with Daxon?
Fine, I said. A part of me wanted to unload on Rapp, to talk about how weird the afternoon had been, but something made me hold back. How was the rest of your grid maintenance?
One out of every three patches I serviced was broken. I've never seen it so bad before.
I perked up at this. He had noticed the conspicuous failure rate, too. You going to do anything about it? I asked, trying to sound more neutral than I felt.
Like what? I put it in my work report. The Academy knows, the Council knows. It's the rest of the planet that's determined to do nothing. The Kabarakians don't see the value in a defense system that only covers the city and leaves them exposed. And half the city thinks we're all just doing this to amuse ourselves. I seem to remember that you're one of those people. Right?
I brushed him off. If we're going to do it, we might as well do it right. Right? Otherwise, the whole thing really is a waste. Rapp left the room for dinner, but I stayed behind, thinking about the quartermoon concert at the Chimera, and about Daxon's ID band on his bedside, poised and ripe for the taking. I thought about Devectra, and I knew what I needed to get my head straight. A party.